here on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and we're coming to you live from Fairfax, Virginia, with a very squeaky mic here. Hello, and happy Memorial Day to everybody out there. And I want to start off with just a very few quick announcements, and then we'll be joined by Tom Adolph from Houston, Texas, and get comfortable because we're gonna have a great show. Get a piece of paper and a pencil, something to write on and something to write with, because you may want to jot down some information a little bit. And then get comfortable because we've got a great show planned for you. At the end of the show, we're ending with a brand new Homeowners Association song, and I'm really excited about that. I'm happy to share it with you. Now we've got two of them, one at the bottom of the hour and one to end with, and it's going to be a lot of fun. For those of you who are in the Washington, Richmond area who would like to go to the Altons Memorial Day Picnic, the Altons, you may remember, are the people, the flag people, the Alton, the Wyndham flagmen down in Richmond. They're having a Memorial Day picnic on Monday from 3 to sundown, and if you watched the 2020 show, you saw their Veterans Day picnic. That was taped for the show. They're going to have another one. If you'd like to go, go check out AmericanFlagTrial.com or AmericanFlagAlliance.com, and you'll get information there. Anyway, joining me now is Tom Adolph. Tom, as I said, is an attorney in Houston, Texas. He is also the son of Beanie Adolph, and my regular listeners have met Beanie on the show a number of times. Thank you for joining me, Tom. I know you're very busy.
Well, I'm happy to be there.
And you, and in my promo, I said that this is sort of new virgin territory for you. Although you're an attorney, I don't think you've really spent a whole lot of time looking into associations, have you?
No, I have not. I'm an intellectual property lawyer, which means I do patents and computer software, and I do not, as a general rule, have anything to do with homeowner rights or homeowner associations.
So what made you decide to start looking into them?
It was through my mother's involvement, and I'm sure that she has talked about how she got involved in it. But briefly, she got involved because some folks tried to change her civic association from a voluntary dues, very laid-back association, to mandatory dues with foreclosure rights. And she and a number of other neighbors fought that successfully. But as she got involved in it and I would talk to her about it, I just became interested in it because of the injustice and greed that I saw going on. And we talked about how it needed to be fought. And my first thought was, we need to get some facts. We need to know numbers and what exactly is going on. Otherwise, it's just a lot of supposition. And so we ended up starting to work on that website.
Well, the website, let's give out the web address. You want to do it?
Sure. I wish I could do that right away.
It's www.hoadata.org. And
it's got another longer one, but yours is easier.
It'll get there.
I
used to give out the longer one, and then your mother wrote and said, guess what, we've got our domain name, so you can get to it. I've been very happy to give that out just about almost every show, not every show, but quite often. And I've been very excited watching the numbers on the counter go up every time I click on there. You get a lot more numbers on there, a lot more people have visited it. What's the count to now?
We really have not changed it in a while because we're going to, really it's more up to my brother Bob how often he wants to update it. We have a number of additional cases that we are collecting, but the website itself is still at around 17,000. But let me comment on that briefly.
Okay.
That's 17,000 foreclosure filings, not actual foreclosure sales, but just where a homeowner association in the Houston area threatened a homeowner with foreclosure by filing a lawsuit. Those are only the ones we're able to find. We're pretty confident that that's undercounting, but we don't know by how much. But what I have discovered in the last couple of weeks through another effort that will soon be on our website, we're trying to list the management companies for the homeowner associations in the Houston area. And I'm pretty close to finishing that. But as I did it, I found the non-judicial foreclosures and sort of the equivalent of the judicial threat where you file a lawsuit. For non-judicial, the threat is by filing a lien. And I don't want anyone to hold me or us to numbers right now, but it is looking like in the Houston area the numbers of liens filed against homeowners is going to be several times the number of judicial threats.
Wow.
I can give you one example with some hard numbers. There is one subdivision I know about in the Houston area that has 181 homes. And since 1985, they have filed, the homeowner association has filed over 140 liens. So you've got a subdivision that is filing 140 liens with 181 homes.
That's almost every home in there.
Well, some of those are repeats.
Right.
Some of them are possibly people who took, you know, bought a house that had been filed against before. But in any event, the number's over 140 with 181 homes. That subdivision is not being run by the neighbors, because I just can't imagine the entire neighborhood wanting to file on itself that many times.
No, it doesn't. This is just incredible. I mean, the numbers are astronomical. And I'm glad you mentioned non-judicial foreclosures, because I went into the Fairfax County Courthouse and asked them, you know, how I go about finding out how many foreclosures there have been. And I was told that, oh, it's, you know, unless you know the name of the person who lost their house, you can't look that information up.
That's right.
In Virginia, we have, you know, we use non-judicial foreclosure. So it's going to be a whole lot harder, I think, to find this information.
What we're thinking of doing, and we haven't decided yet, but we might try to post numbers on just the lien filings, because it's very similar to the actual judicial filings. I mean, it is a threat, and a threat of foreclosure, and usually it includes not just a past due assessment, but a late charge, interest, and attorney's fees. And so it is already a situation where the homeowner is being faced with a much higher debt than really should be paid in those situations.
We get a lot of emails and calls from people saying, hey, you know, I legitimately owed $100 and now they want $7,000 because of all the legal fees and things added. I mailed you, I don't know if you got it, I emailed you an article that I found.
That Miami one?
The Miami one, yes.
Yes.
I thought that was an interesting argument. I don't know what happened with that, but for those of you who did not get a copy of that, one of the attorneys in Miami said that, and what do you think of this argument, Tom?
I didn't read the whole thing, I'm sorry.
Okay. The attorney, Blaine Carneal, says applying overdue money to late fees and other charges strips the judiciary of its constitutional authority. Only a judge can decide when one party in a dispute has prevailed and is entitled to reimbursement of legal fees.
Well, I like the argument. We have to wait for a court to decide on it.
Is it a valid argument?
It sounds like a valid argument, but as a lawyer, I have to say, until a judge decides, we don't know whether it wins.
No, I understand that.
But I am seeing similar situations. I got a call or an email. They run together these days.
Yeah.
From someone in Houston who went through trial, lost, and the homeowner association got an award of attorney's fees, which he paid. And then the homeowner association decided it had additional legal fees that it hadn't gotten from the judge and hadn't even asked for, and just tacked that on to his account and is now going after him, you know, and threatening foreclosure. And the Miami attorney's argument, I think, would be very good for this man.
Well, if you want to send it on, by all means, I need to contact this attorney. I tried before, but I will do it. I'll contact him, find out if he's done anything with that, because that was an older article.
The argument that he's making on attorney's fees is much easier made, much more easily made on fines, and you had sent me those two cases on fines.
Right.
And certainly that's going on here and elsewhere.
I've been sending that to any attorneys that throughout the country who either work with homeowners and or are working on are lobbying for individual rights, and so I make sure they get a copy of both of those cases. And my listeners are very familiar with them. My regular listeners, that's Gilman and Foley, and they're both good cases. But you took this a step further, Tom. You actually took a look at the Texas laws regulating homeowner associations, and you wrote an extremely good paper on your opinion on what you thought about the laws regulating homeowners associations in Texas. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, I'll let you ask me specific questions on anything that interested you, but just generally, after we had gotten the website in place, and let me do an aside here.
Okay.
Doing the website was a very interesting experience because of the use of talents of our family members. It just kind of came together. We had my mother and her passion, me with my legal skills, my brother Bob with his computer ability, and then my nephew Chris, that's Bob's son, and his statistical ability. And it just, those talents kind of came together, and it was a nice little synergy. But done with that aside, after we had done that, it occurred to me that what I really needed to do with my legal skills in this area was to look at the law, see what it is, and that's really where the change has got to occur. And we've got, in fact, there's a legislative subcommittee hearing on Tuesday that a number of people will be at. I will be there, and we are hoping to get these laws changed. Toward that effort, the first thing to do was to look at what the law was and figure out where I thought the problems existed.
You had one sentence in here that I really liked, and you're talking about the laws, and you say it's a right that President Nixon, President Clinton, and Vice President Cheney would have loved to have had. And this is right up front when you talk about a particular portion of the law, chapter.
Yeah, Sheila, let me interrupt you just because I'm glad you focused on that, because that's my favorite problem with this law. It's not the worst one, but I think it exemplifies the free hand that the homeowner association side has had in the Texas legislature for them to get this particular law that you and I are talking about. Is extraordinary, and it shows that there's just been no watchdog. And the way I would put it to explain it to the listeners is, in this post-Watergate era, where Nixon fell within a day or two after the Supreme Court ordered him to turn over documents, can any of us imagine Congress passing a law or a president asking for a law that says that any document relating to the president is not discoverable in any lawsuit or any proceeding and never, ever has to be turned over.
But you see, that's not a government by contract, is it, Tom?
No. I mean, we can't imagine that kind of a situation, and yet what happened last year in this legislation that I call a Trojan horse, where the Texas legislature passed the Winona Blevins Protection Act, or I forget the proper name of it, but it
was a giggle, wasn't it?
Pardon?
It was a giggle, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. This law that on by its title, at least, was supposed to protect people like Winona Blevins, one of the provisions says that any records of an HOA attorney are never discoverable. You can't get them in any kind of proceeding. Now, it doesn't give that kind of protection to the homeowner association, and it doesn't give that protection to the management company, but it gives it to the attorneys. And so if the attorney sends out violation letters or anything that the attorney does, it's just not something you can get your hands on.
Oh, it just involves the attorneys, huh?
It's just the attorneys.
And I wonder who wrote that law, who lobbied for that law.
Well, I wish I could answer that. I really can't. I wasn't involved in it, and I haven't studied it. I know that Senator Corona was one of the proponents of it, but I believe at least parts of it were written before, and it was just thrown in again in this past session. So I really don't know who originally authored it, but it was Senator Corona who introduced it, and Senator Corona at least at one time owned some management companies. Whether he does now or not is somewhat a dispute.
Does. I think he still does, actually, because we found a bunch of stuff on the internet. But
yeah, I know there's a bunch of stuff on the internet, yeah. And I don't want to say anything that I don't know for a fact. But I know this much: there's some dispute whether he still does.
Okay. Yeah, there was something on his webpage saying he'd sold it, and then there was other stuff that came up that said he still owned it, and I have no idea. But I got a letter from an attorney in California who was very upset with me because I said that the industry members tend to lobby for a lot of these laws. And he says, I'm on the Legislative Action Committee, and it's the homeowners who want all this stuff. Do you think the homeowners would go in and lobby for some of those laws to protect the attorneys?
My first guess would be no.
That's
but
my
but
guess
on the other hand, Shu, the fact is that there are homeowners on both sides of this issue, because there are the people who are on the boards that are on the same side with the management companies and the attorneys, and they still qualify as homeowners. So if you want to use the literal term homeowner,
right,
there's some homeowner who's asking for this, and we are, I'm sure the management companies and the attorneys themselves are also homeowners. We're going to get into a semantic argument there.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But I think the homeowners have been looking for some kind of protection, some kind of adult supervision. I know that that's been going on across the country. There's no one to turn to. And usually they end up finding a web page. And I know that you've been getting a lot of emails. I know I get emails. I know anybody with a website out there with any kind of anything to do with homeowners associations gets a lot of emails from people saying, help, who can I turn to, where can I go for help?
We get a tremendous number of emails, yes.
Yeah, I imagine you do. Back to your paper, you talk about the problems and you list them, and I could have kissed you if you were here. When you say, I believe that HOA should not have any power to foreclose, HOA should not be in a better position than a doctor who saves a person's life, or a credit card company, or a lawyer, or any other creditor. And yet they are, aren't they?
Yes, they are, and I firmly believe they shouldn't be. And I would hope that might change. I know that there is a practical problem in dealing with the legislature and possibly ever getting that changed. But I really do think if we could step back and write the laws that would exemplify the values that people have, if we're not going to give a doctor the right to foreclose on someone's home for saving the person's life, why would we give that power to a homeowner association that...
pick up the trash.
Yeah, that maybe helps pick up the trash and maybe helps to do one or two things that helps that homeowner every once in a while. And I am a person... I believe homeowner associations have a value. I just don't like the abuse, but in the scheme of things, if a doctor and any other creditor does not have the right to foreclose, there is just no justifiable reason to give that power to homeowner associations. And the one argument that they make constantly is that, well, there's actually two arguments they make. One is that it increases property value, the homeowner associations increase property values, and that therefore somehow they jump from that to they need the foreclosure right.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is that if we don't have that right, we'll go bankrupt. Now, I don't think there's been any real proof of either one of those. And if you're going to use what I would call the nuclear weapon of foreclosing on somebody's home, you'd better have a very strong proof of the need for it. And I just haven't seen it.
Let's take a doctor. Let's take a credit card company. Suppose you get a credit card and you go and sort of run it up to the max. Are there any due process protections in there when it comes to the credit card company trying to collect what it's owed?
What do you mean by due process?
I mean,
protect the credit card company or protect the homeowner?
Protect the individual. If I were to get a credit card and just run it up to the max and not pay it off, suppose I had a $50,000 limit and I didn't pay it off. Are there any protections in place to prevent the credit card company from doing whatever it does to collect? From me. Well, I mean, is there some procedure in place to make sure that maybe I in fact do owe the money?
Oh yes, there is, of course.
And they can't just come and take my car or my house or
No, they can't. Now you're asking for some specifics that I would have to go and look at the law to figure out exactly what the correct answer is. But in general, there are secured creditors and unsecured creditors, and the secured creditor will have a right in a particular piece of collateral that they can foreclose on if they get a judgment. And
right.
The unsecured creditor just has to wait in line behind the secured creditors. I think if we truly considered the value that HOAs give as a society, we would have to say we want them in line with the unsecured creditors. We don't want them taking people's houses.
Especially when there's all kinds of inconsistencies and inaccuracies in their accounting procedures.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah. Virtually every case that I've been I've been involved in.
Yes, I'm looking at one right now where the deed restrictions permit the HOA after 30 days. If you're late for 30 days, it permits the HOA to charge interest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the assessment in this particular subdivision is rather high. I think it's $77 a month, which over a year is quite a bit of money. But if you're late 1 month on, let's make it easy, $70.
Mm-hmm.
If the interest rate is say 10%, you'd have to be late for a year for them to charge you $7.
Mm-hmm.
And what they are doing is they're not following the bylaws. When you're late 15 days or 20 days, they charge you $10 of the late fee.
Right.
And a little bit later, they will tack on attorney's fees.
Right.
And they're just not following their own rules.
Right. That happened actually in my association, and when we pointed out that they didn't have the authority to do that, we found out that they changed their policy. And if you didn't know that the governing document said that you could charge a percentage, then they would go ahead and take the $10. But if you pointed out that they were in the wrong, then they'd go ahead and take the percentage, which was, of course, a whole lot less.
Yeah.
It's like 6% per annum, so it's like 0.5% a month.
Yes, I think an awful lot of what goes on is done because they're playing on people's ignorance.
Yeah.
And just on bullying tactics, and I will relate one conversation that I had with someone that really is a horrible example, but it probably is shared by many of your listeners. There's a man here in Houston who is being harassed by his homeowner association. Actually, it's a management company. And he called the management company to try to clear things, and the woman at the management company told him, said, "Look, as far as you're concerned, I'm God." And he was, of course, aghast at that, and he went to his homeowner association board. And he told them, he said, "This is what this woman told me. She said, as far as I'm concerned, she's God." And he said the board laughed at him and said, "She's right."
Your mother, I think your brother told me that story.
Oh, she did? Okay, I'm sorry.
No, but my listeners haven't heard it, so I think that's great. But yeah, I mean, even when they don't come up with those actual words, there's definitely the sense they're giving you that you just don't argue with them because they're in the right and you're not. And you've got to toe the line. You got to behave yourself. We've got, we got some emails from people, and we'll get to those, you know, when we come back from the break. And basically, we're getting the same type of stuff, you know. They won't talk to me. They refuse to give me the information I want. The other thing I want to talk about when we come back from break, Tom, is refusing to accept texts.
Oh, yes.
This is happening more and more and more, where people send in checks.
Shu, when we come back, then we will talk about that, because we have found, at least in one particular management company contract, what I call bounties that are paid to management companies, and we'll talk about that then.
Ooh, okay, we'll do that. Why don't we take a break? Why don't we come back in just a couple of minutes, and we'll continue with Tom Adolf.
Thank you.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WBR, Fairfax, Virginia. You're on The Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. On The Commons with me today is Tom Adolf from Houston, Texas. And we'll be back with Tom in just a second. I had asked you at the beginning of the show to grab something to write on and something to write with, because I was going to give you some information. Well, here it is, guys. If you're interested in getting a bumper sticker that says, "No HOAs, reclaim our rights," I've got some. In fact, it's the brainchild of my guest's mother, who got a whole bunch of them made up. And I'm willing to send you one if you would like one. Send me a self-addressed stamped business-sized envelope to Fairfax Public Access, or FPA, The address is 2929 Eskridge, Eskridge Road, Suite S, Fairfax, Virginia, 22031. And I'll be happy to stick one in the mail to you. Okay, for those of you who tune in and listen to the Prog Rock Diner, it'll be closed tomorrow, but they're going to have Radio Retro and the Blues for 4 hours from 8 p.m. to midnight tomorrow night. And next Sunday, June 2nd, the diner will reopen from 8 p.m. to midnight, offering a banquet of progressive rock. So be sure to tune in right here on WEBR for all of that good information for you. Also, tomorrow, be sure to check the LA Times, because there's another common interest living. And this one deals with a homeowner who was caught trying to sell after living in this association for 2 years, was held hostage by the board, the association, the management company, and the realtor who used to be a board member. And they just basically fined him and found all kinds of problems in just to sell the house. He sold it at lower than market value just to get out, ended up paying twice as much in the penalties. And the answer is very good. I don't have time to read it to you, but be sure to check it out, latimes.com tomorrow. Go to the real estate section and look for the common interest living column. Okay, I think that's it. If you want to go to the Olton's Picnic, go to AmericanFlagTrial.com. They're holding that on Monday from 3 to sundown. Thank you, Tom. We're back with Tom Adolph, and Tom has been doing a lot of analysis on the laws regulating homeowner associations in Houston. And before we went to break, we decided that we're going to come back and talk about people, associations who refuse to accept checks.
Yes, Shu, and what I mentioned was what I call bounties, and I don't know how prevalent this is, but I do have a copy of a management company contract that gives the management company $10 for every deed restriction violation that they turn over to an attorney, $10 for every late fee for each account, $10 every time there is a lien prepared or release prepared, and there's some other conditions, but the ones that I just mentioned, those three, give the management company an incentive to not cooperate with a homeowner and turn it over to an attorney. It gives them an incentive not to accept payment and declare it to be a late fee, it gives them an incentive to prepare a lien. It's not a good way to structure an agreement with your management company from the standpoint of the homeowners, because it puts them in the position of making money if they can cause conflict.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, there's that. I mean, I've heard of all sorts of things, as you might imagine. I got a call from someone who was a brand new condo owner, and she was very, very excited. She'd settled, about 5 days on the 25th of the month, because quite often realtors will schedule settlements with a couple of days. They don't want you to have to pay extra interest, but they want a couple of days in case something doesn't come in and still get you closed on time at the end of the month. And she wrote to me and said, hey, you know, I bought this place. I'm really excited. And she said, I got a bill for my first month's condo fees, and I sent it in the following month. And she says, I wrote the check and sent the entire amount in full. The following month, she says, I got a late due notice. I got a notice for that month's payment, plus the 5 days that I had bought, you know, during the month that I had bought the condo, with a late fee attached. And yeah, she said, so I sent in the 5 days. I sent in the full month. I sent in the 5 days. She said, I refused to pay the late fee. because I didn't feel I owed it. Well, what she didn't know, being a brand new buyer, was that she did pay it because it was prorated at settlement.
Yeah.
And so here you've got a management company with no adult supervision, with just complete unfettered access to these poor little homeowners who are so afraid of losing their homes, where they're stealing them blind, robbing them with, from, you know, just charging them for things that they don't owe, and people just pay it.
Yes.
And there's no adult supervision. There's no way of knowing.
Yeah, you keep saying the no adult supervision. Interesting term, Shu, but I have found it ironic that the people who want to impose all these rules on everyone else are fighting so hard against any rules on their own supervision and management.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if rules are good,
mm-hmm.
then let's have them. And
that's right. That's a good point.
There's an awful lot of emotion involved in this on both sides, and it unfortunately hurts a lot of discussion and ability to compromise. Because too often the people on the other side of this issue from us think that anything we say means we want to abolish HOAs completely, just wipe them out. And, you know, they do have a value, I think. I know some people don't think that, but I do. I liken it to our police force. We love our police. We want police. But at the same time, we're very glad that we have protection and rules and court decisions on the abuse of police power. And that's really what this fight is about, is just having what you are terming adult supervision. Let's have rules on what the HOAs can and can't do.
Well, let's have someone looking over their shoulders. You talked about bounties. I've heard about this, and it's perfectly within the realm of possibilities. What about fines? I mean, when you've got a manager who sits there and decides to do a drive-by and thinks, oh dear, you know, that weed looks like it's 3 inches tall instead of the allowed 2.5 inches tall, therefore, you know, there's a $25 daily fine. And
well, you have the poor man here in Houston with the lamppost that I'm sure everyone is very familiar with a $200 a day fine.
I know, $140,000, which is ridiculous.
It really comes down to a problem that I describe in the paper that we've talked about occasionally here, and that is, I think that there just hasn't been enough thought by our legislators about this. When the founding fathers of America were considering the Constitution, the states refused to adopt the Constitution without a Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted a Bill of Rights. They studied government much better than we did. I mean, we're more focused on technology in this day, but their focus was largely on government. And, you know, they separated the legislative, executive, and
mm-hmm.
judicial branches. And what HOAs are a combination of all those three, so that the HOA, or the management company it gives it the power to, gets to act as legislator, judge, and, you know, police and judge. And that's not a good combination. And so your question began with the issue of fines, and yeah, I firmly believe that HOA should not have the power to fine. And if I may bring that to a discussion of the Texas laws,
sure.
It's been a very interesting, and I cannot comment, I cannot say whether anyone intentionally did this, but if they did, it was quite clever. There isn't any Texas law that expressly grants HOAs the right to fine. There is a provision that says a court can assess up to $200 a day. And then a later provision, I think it was Chapter 209, which was enacted last year, there is a provision that just comments, it implies that the HOAs already have the power to fine. But there was no actual grant in any provision, at least not that I've found. I could be wrong. Like I said, this isn't my real area of expertise, but I don't think it's been granted to them. And I have heard attorneys for the HOAs say on sometimes, we don't have the power to fine, and on other times, yes, we do. And so I'm not sure exactly what's going on there, but in the end, I just don't think they should. The homeowner has to have the ability to be heard and to have his or her case decided fairly. I've got a situation right now. I'm helping a woman who received a deed restriction violation notice that she says just flat out isn't true. She mm-hmm. was told that her dogs were let loose mm-hmm. in the neighborhood, and she said no, they never were.
Yeah.
And when she got the letter, she had already put her dogs in the kennel. They were no longer at the house. But then she was threatened with foreclosure on all of this that began with a letter that came after the dogs were gone.
Yeah, I mean, the mistakes, they're all over the place. You hear about them repeatedly, and that's a perfect example. I really like something that you had in here where you would like to put all of these things to a vote of the owners.
I'm hopeful that our Texas legislature will do something with that. My first line is I don't think they should have the right to foreclose.
Mm-hmm.
But if the legislature decides that they're going to compromise and they're going to keep the power to foreclose, then I think they ought to take the position that a foreclosure only occurs if there is a vote of the members. In other words, if the homeowner association truly represents the neighborhood, then let the neighbors decide, yes, we've had it with this particular neighbor and it's time to foreclose. I would like to see it happen that way if it's not going to be prohibited altogether.
I like that as a second, as a fallback position. Because right now, most people don't have a clue. You know, somebody loses their house, they just disappear in the middle of the night, and nobody really knows about it. I mean, Winona was lucky because the press picked that story up, and, you know, we got global coverage on it. But there are 17,000 foreclosure filings that you're talking about that you've got documented on HOAData.org, and I don't think there was a big media falderal about any of those, was there?
No, there wasn't, and I agree. I've struggled with the right word to use, whether it's secrecy. It's not exactly secrecy because these are public records. They're just awfully hard to find. But it's certainly ignorance.
I like ignorance, yes.
Yeah, you know, and the example I gave before, I think, is an excellent one. I cannot imagine a neighborhood with 181 homes
mm-hmm.
standing for liens to be filed, 140 plus liens to be filed, if they knew about it. And I know they don't know about it because the woman that I'm helping there had no clue that there were that many liens filed. She didn't. You know, she couldn't name anybody that had a lien filed against her. And it's the fact that this is done without everyone knowing it that allows it to continue.
Do the board members know it, or is this something that management does on its own, or maybe they just kick it over to legal and say,
"Hey, you've asked a question that an attorney has to answer." Precisely. I don't know what the board members know. But I can tell you one rather interesting email communication that I had once our website went up. the president of a homeowner association here in Houston called, or no, he emailed, and he said, I like what you're doing, because I think that these abuses need to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I object to your listing our association with this many foreclosures, because we don't foreclose.
Mm-hmm.
So we put that association on, we designated it as under review,
mm-hmm.
and I went and actually got the court papers for each one of the cases that we could find for that subdivision, and in all but I think one or two of them, the association's papers expressly asked to foreclose on the neighbor, on the home. And so I responded to him and said, okay, I've looked at them, and we've decided we're going to have to keep them, because, and then I gave him all of the notes I had. This is what it says. Well, he said, I'm going to have to go back to my attorney, because we just don't ask for foreclosures.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up with him, he never really accepted it. He still objected that they shouldn't be on there. But I think in his mind, he truly doesn't think that they're asking for foreclosure.
Yeah, I think quite often, I mean, I've seen, you know, management say, you don't worry your pretty little heads about it, board members. You got enough to do without all of this hassle, and we'll just take care of it. And then they just automatically kick things over to legal. Legal doesn't do their homework. They just think, all right, we'll just send out these form letters, and off we go.
Yeah, I've got an amazing document, at least it amazes me, that was filed in February 1999 by a law firm here that appoints the law firm to act for the association, to exercise any right, any lien rights, and any private power of sale, so that the homeowner association doesn't have to worry about it anymore. Yeah. They don't even have to know about it.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about it. That's what you pay us for.
Yeah.
We're the professionals. You've got families to take care of. You know, go do your thing. Leave us alone. We'll take care of it.
So it comes back to what you began with, and what my point in the paper is. I don't think foreclosures should happen, but if they're going to happen, I don't think they should happen without everybody in the neighborhood knowing about it and deciding this is what we want.
That brings me to, and we're never going to get through this. We haven't even left page one yet, believe it or not, guys. But this brings me to voting. I mean, in order to vote, to put it out to a vote and say, all right, you know, community decide. These are the facts, and we're going to let the homeowner present his or her case, and then you vote. You make the decision whether we go ahead and foreclose or not. But then you go down to voting, and you talk about the current practice of HOAs disqualifying owners from voting.
Yeah.
The current practice of HOA boards refusing to abide by the outcome of the votes. I mean, you've got a number of things here. You talk about weighted votes down here. What about it? I mean, if I can vote, if I'm disqualified from voting for a new board because I allegedly, for whatever reason, owe money or, you know, didn't open my curtains exactly on the dot of 8 in the morning or whatever the rule happens to be that I broke, are they going to then allow people to vote, do you think?
Well, I'm not going to speculate on that issue, but I do know that that there are a lot of deed restrictions that say that a homeowner does not have the right to vote so long as he or she is in violation of a deed restriction or owes any money.
Is that democratic?
I don't think it's right, and I am certainly going to be asking the legislature, and on Tuesday when I'm at the hearing, one of the first points I'm going to make is that homeowner associations should never have the right to deny anyone the right to vote.
Thank you.
You know, in our regular elections, the only way that you lose the right to vote is if you have been convicted of a felony,
mm-hmm.
and that's in our Constitution. And I just don't think there is anything comparable with respect to homeowner rights and homeowner association activities. And it just cannot be. And I've gotten the impression that at least the legislative assistant that we have met with is in favor of that, and I hope that particular provision is enacted next year.
I think that sounds great. And is there? Let's go back just for half a second back to refusing to accept payments when people send in payments. I've heard of managers sitting on them and not depositing them till after the due date has come and gone, or just plain not depositing them at all. And there's no law that says that you have to accept payment. And that's from the federal level. I don't know on the individual state levels. But yet when you talk to individual associations or industry attorneys, they'll say, oh, well, you know, it's really not fair to have these freeloaders here, and they really ought to pay their fair share. What about people who are trying to pay? Is it
easy answer to that?
are you going to suggest that maybe there is a law, or they enact a law that provides for acceptance of any amount?
Unfortunately, Sue, I hadn't thought about a provision on that. But I will give it some thought before Tuesday, because it certainly is a practice that never should go on. One of the problems, though, and it's not a problem with the idea, but it's a problem with so many of the things that are abused right now. For example, just trying to get documents from an HOA.
Yeah.
The problem is giving any real remedy for a violation. If they don't accept your check, if they don't, the HOA does not give you a copy of the management agreement, or
mm-hmm.
does not give you the bylaws, or lets you see the financial documents. Right now, at least in Texas, there's no really effective remedy that gives the HOA an incentive to act quickly and abide with the law, because they know that the only way for you to get enforcement is to file a lawsuit. And that's an expense most homeowners just can't or won't go to. And so there's going to have to be some kind of a real remedy. And one of the problems I've heard from many people is that the laws protect homeowner associations
yeah.
From liability. And I'm not ready to impose a liability on the board when they are volunteers, but I do think there ought to be a liability on management companies and attorneys if they are part of these abuses. And I'm not sure what we do with the board, because if you don't protect volunteers, you're never going to have volunteers. That's a problem that all charities and nonprofits face.
I agree, and I think that. But I also think that if it's something that's important to you, then you will volunteer and you will do it. I just don't think enough people really care about the association. They just find themselves in one because there's no alternative.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because I've seen the CAI statements that they make quite often that trumpet how popular HOAs are because so many people live in them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I live in one, but if I had a real choice, I probably wouldn't, because I don't think it's all that necessary. But my homeowner association is actually fairly benign. I really like the people that are on it. And so we're in a very good situation. But
you're one election away.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You're one election away.
That's right. But also, just to say that homeowner associations are popular because so many people live in them is a ridiculous statement, because most people don't even pay attention to it when they buy their house.
They don't have the option. Listen, thank you so much, Tom. Believe it or not, we are out of time, and I really want to thank you for coming on, and good luck on Tuesday. Go give them hell. They need to hear from you. You've got some great ideas, and I wish you all the luck.
Thank you very much, Sue.
And thanks for joining us today.
Okay.
And for the rest of you, stay tuned.